Ajaga, I have a question regarding
Walaikum Assalam.
So the question is basically related to the manifestation. You explained that you know, soul, body is a very crude form of a soul or a very low form of a soul. And when we talk about the difference between the soul of a man and a woman, then they have their own attributes. Certain attributes of Allah Ta'ala are manifested, you know, in men, and certain other are manifested in women. So it's basically related to that. We have one example, and this is about the status of, you know, women. The most revered figure in Islam, Hazrat Zahra, she has been given the most, you know, elevated status of the wilaya. But the status of prophethood or the imamat, which is a title, that title is not given. This is sometimes, you know, raised by some other people. I mean, especially non-Muslims. So my question is, like, if souls, they attribute, you know, certain they manifest certain attributes of Allah Ta'ala. So why can't we elevate to the status that even those titles can be, you know, given to, you know, ladies? Or what's the, you know, hikmah behind that?
Yes, I think the answer you gave yourself in your introduction to the question, and that is prophethood and imamat is a title. It's not a status. Yes, wilaya is a status of the soul. It's a spiritual ranking of the soul. But prophethood and imama, these are positions and titles. And these positions and titles have responsibilities, one of which is that they have to lead the wars of the time. And leading the war of a time compromises the nurturing capacity of the woman. And therefore, that's not desired for the woman. Now, even going to war, the women are allowed to go to war if they want, but it's not desired for them because their nurturing capacity may be compromised. Now, so this has no bearing. Women can be ma'soom, men can be ma'soom. Women can reach the highest levels of spirituality, men can reach the highest levels of spirituality. But this question is in relation to responsibilities, one of which is leading at the war front and going into battle. And that is not compatible with what Islam wants from the woman. But just because this responsibility hasn't been given to the woman doesn't mean her spirituality, status-wise, is compromised.
Elegant presentation.
Thank you very much.
You spoke about Zahiri and Batinal things. And I can understand that you should strive for the hidden meaning of these things. Mm-hmm. However, the question that arises is that how is a non-Muslim going to interpret some of these things? For example, Surah Nisa comes up, 34. And that is a tough thing for me to understand on the role of women. And despite all these explanations, I have not been able to understand the hidden meaning behind that very well. How do I address that to a non-Muslim who picks that up to speak against Islam and the role of women in Islam?
Yes, I think the verse you're referring to, is it the one, Wadribuhunna?
I'm not talking about in which you can be beaten.
Oh, beaten, yes. Yes, this verse of the Holy Quran, as the brother said, chapter 4, verse 34, is one of the most abused verses of the Holy Quran. And here, there are four positions on this, and the Urafa's position, if you know what it is, or get to know what it is, then makes what is the most abused verse by the people in the West of the Quran becomes the most sensitive and delicate of verses in relation to man and woman relationships. Now, I can answer it now if you want, but that will take the whole time of the Q&A. And I'm a bit tired also. Here in this verse about hitting women, or the dharb of women, the one or two introductory points we have to first appreciate. This dharb, that is commonly translated as beating or hitting, let's call it striking for now. This striking is only in relation to one action that the woman does, not any action. And that's sexual gratification. She can't, without excuse, refrain to gratify the man. Without excuse, she can't. That's the one wajib thing that she has to do compared to the man's 101. However, if the man refrains from his wajib duties to the woman 50%, she can refrain from that gratification with truth 50%, and vice versa. If she refrains from that action 50%, the man can withdraw, giving the nafaqa 50%. This is the letter of the law in fiqh, sharia. So this one action of the woman is on a par with the duties of nafaqa of the man. Each of them, if they withdraw, the other can withdraw in proportion to the extent the other had withdrew. That's one point. So this striking is only in relation to one, and that's one action of the woman, nothing else. Let's say if she doesn't cook or she, nothing, because nothing is wajib. So the striking only comes to this one wajib action. Now, before we come to the striking, two other actions are prescribed to the man. This is a hierarchy of Amr bil Ma'ruf. Now, before going to the verse again, we have to understand that Amr bil Ma'ruf has conditions and prerequisites, one of which is that if the man, or in general, for now let's speak in general terms, if someone wants to give Amr bil Ma'ruf to someone, one has to deem it probable that the other party, that it will be of effect to the other party. One has to deem it probable. For example, if you go to a non-Muslim restaurant and consume a vegetarian dish, and that's okay, you're allowed, there's no problem in that. But if you go to, and they're selling alcohol too, but you can go and have the vegetarian dish. And bon appétit, as they say. But if you go to a Muslim restaurant and have the same vegetarian dish, let's say, but you see they're selling alcohol, here there's an added responsibility you have. Now you may say that, look, are you condoning people to go to the non-Muslim restaurants? Well, that's not these are things that I've been told. Well, tell the brother not to sell alcohol, for goodness sake. Otherwise, if you go to a Muslim restaurant that is selling alcohol, here an added responsibility is upon your shoulders. And that is, you have to do Amr bil Ma'ruf if you deem it probable it will be of effect. Otherwise, no. If you don't deem it probable, Amr bil Ma'ruf is cancelled. There's no duty. This verse has three steps. Step one, if the woman refrains without excuse from gratifying the man, the first step that the Quran says is give mu'adha, give counseling, i.e. advising, speak with them, speak with the woman. This is the first step of Amr bil Ma'ruf. Okay, so the first question the man has to ask is, will this be of effect if I was to speak and advise her? Well, 99.99%, the answer should be yes. If the answer is no, it's a very rocky relationship. Counseling. Speak with it. What's wrong? Why are you refraining without good excuse? That is the first step that you do. And in general, if I just can speak on the margin, man and woman should never be ashamed of going to a family counselor. If it's a Muslim, it has advantages, but even if it's a non-Muslim, you can benefit. Don't delay it. If things are rocky, especially in the beginning, these things can easily be sorted out. If the elders of the community aren't there, or you feel uncomfortable with them, if there's no local sheikh, or you feel uncomfortable with him, at least go to a counselor. Many people who have gone to counseling, they all told me that if only we could have started earlier. All of them regret delaying it. It's a good thing. It's not bad. So the first step is to go and speak and advise the woman. Do you deem it to be of effect? The answer is yes, you go and tell her. Let's say, though, she still continues. Okay? Now you go to step two. Step two is turning away from her in the bed, from the bed. Here, this is step two of Amr bil Ma'ruf. So the question now you have to ask, do I deem it probable that this will be effective? Effective for what? That she returns from her ways. Okay? If the answer is yes, you do this second step. If the answer is no, this second step stops there and you never come to step three. If you do step two and it's ineffective, now you go to step three, which is wadribu hunna, strike them. Hunna is the female pronoun for them. And wadribu is addressed to the men, strike. Strike them. The reason I'm stressing these, the pronouns and everything. Now, is this hitting? Is this beating? It's impossible for this to be the case. Because in the Sharia, if you discolor the skin of a human being, there's blood money assigned to it. Even if you make the pink color of one's skin, or whatever color of one's skin, change, for example, becomes red. The slightest change, the dear blood money protocol starts. The more discoloration, the more the blood money. So without a doubt, it's not hitting. Without a doubt, beating. These are wrong translations. However, we don't want to sound apologetic. The Quran is the Quran. It says, وَادْرِبُوا هُنَّ. There's a form of striking. This striking, though, can't discolor one's skin. But there's a striking here. It says, darb. We don't want to escape the text. It's a striking, and strike them, but in a way that no discoloration happens. And then, and actually it was with a toothbrush that you do the striking. It was from a wooden toothbrush. And it didn't say poking, it says striking. If you get a pen, it's okay, yes. Yes, yes, striking, yes. If you get a pen and poke someone, it hurts. The Arabic word is it'an, poke. This is darb. If this is, let's say, it's like that. But it can't discolor the skin. And that has no pain. So the question is, why? Why have this then? Why have a striking as step three when there's no pain associated with it? But we haven't escaped the idea that there is a form of striking here. And this is where the ORFO have really flourished with their interpretation and say, yes, the man and woman relationship in the house, Islam's protocol is this, that were the man to strike with a flimsy piece of wood, which doesn't lead to discoloration, the woman would take heed. She will be affected and she will change her ways. But for that to happen, look how close the relationship has to be, that with a simple striking, it affects the woman and she changes her ways. And this is the protocol of how man and woman relationship has to be in the house. And this is what we have to exclaim to the world. This is what Islam wants, to be the ambiance in the house. But it's been totally taken away. Now, there are other interpretations too. Some people have looked at this very apologetically. You be very careful about this. When you want to preach Islam to the West, either don't speak about Islam when you don't have the knowledge and you do a disservice to Islam. Islam is a science. Each part of Islam, in theory, has to be learned for years and years. 15 years is nothing in the Hawza. Medics, engineers, architects, graphic design, everyone today we see have given themselves the right to speak about Islam. It has problems. And I'm facing these problems wherever I go. Yes, sometimes out of necessity, there's no other way, there's no other person. Okay, that you do that out of necessity. Sometimes you have to consume the meat of pigs out of necessity when you're dying. Okay, that I don't mean that. And if a community is in that state, the people of that community have to come out of that state. If you're looking for food and you only have pig meat, yes, out of necessity you consume that much that so you don't die out of starvation. But you look for food. You're not convinced to continue that status quo forever and ever. Here too, with spiritual food, you have to look for people to come and teach you this. It's important. Here, some people are very focused on how will the West think about us. And they choose the most simplest interpretations on certain verses just to feel better. But what right do you have to do that? Just because you don't understand Islam, you don't have the right to act apologetically. And therefore, you have to keep to the prima facie meaning. Some people have said, darb has many meanings in Arabic, and they're right. In the Maqtals also, with Lady Fatima alayhi salam, when she places her hand on the wall, the word daraba is used. It means placing. It doesn't only mean hitting. Some people have said that in this verse, strike them, it means daraba here means travel away from them. We ask them, where's your evidence? They say the Quran. The word daraba is used in the Quran with this meaning. Daraba fil ard, traveling in the land. And they use this. However, in that verse, it says traveling fil ard, in the land. The prepositions are important here. It says traveling, yes. But it then says in the land. Here in this verse of the Quran, it says, wadribu hunna. Either you have to translate it as travel them. They want to get from this meaning that it means men should travel away from the house, away from the woman. And they may have a good time. And they're trying to get some kind of justification here. But no. You can't play around with the words of Allah. It has to fit. وَدْرِبُوهُنَّ Strike them. That fits. If you want to bring the traveling away from them, there's no preposition here. You can't make it up. You know, you can't make things up. So that's one point. Another group of scholars have said that we have traditions. And yes, they're right. And this is a good position to have too. That this strike them is not a physical striking, but strike them with not giving them the nafaqah. And this, we have it in traditions, and the Holy Messenger also uses the word wadribuhunna, but he then uses bilju wal ara, with hunger and clothing, no clothing. And that's in relation to the nafaqah. You strike them with not giving them the nafaqah, and that can be accepted. And that has, you know, the correct standards, because we said that the verse is in relation to not giving, the woman's not giving the nafaqah. So that position and the urafot position can be accepted. The traveling position can't be accepted. And the fourth is actually hitting them. That also can't be accepted because of the absolute principle that even a discoloration of the skin leads to nafaqah. And that can't be adhered to in this verse. So with your permission, after speaking a very long answer, we'll stop there, inshallah. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammad wa ala.